1949, George Orwell portrays a chilling world in which computers are used by large bureaucracies to monitor and enslave the population in his book 1984. The year is 1976. Kurzweil Computer Products introduces the Kurzweil Reading Machine, the first print-to-speech reading machine for the blind. 1997, Deep Blue beats Garry Kasparov, the world chess champion, in a regulation tournament.
I'm not waiting for the answers on a Sunday afternoon.
Welcome, everybody, to the September edition of In the Now. It is Sunday the 16th of September. JP?
What's up, all?
Dimitri?
Yo, man.
Yeah?
Signing on tonight.
All right. Okay. Got a couple of stories we're going to go into, and then we're going to spend a lot of time talking about what's been going on over the last couple of days.
It's been crazy.
It's been pretty crazy.
This has been the most surreal week that
I've used that word like 50 times.
Yeah, I think I've used it that many today.
So much to think about just drowns my head every day. Okay, well, here's a quick story about the Microsoft Home Station, which is the predecessor to the Xbox.
Have
you guys heard about this?
No, not
no.
at all. I am completely in the dark.
Are you sure you don't mean successor?
I mean successor.
Okay,
my bad.
In that case,
successor.
Yeah, I'm all over it.
Okay, you're all over it? Microsoft's working on a top-secret home entertainment device code named Home Station. The PC/Xbox hybrid will run on a version of Windows, of course, to form a home entertainment hub. The device will finally turn the idea of digital convergence into a living room reality. Following in the footsteps of the PC-influenced Xbox, the device is likely to be a non-upgradable sealed unit with a system board based on NVIDIA's GeForce, boasting GeForce graphics, Dolby surround sound. Home system will come equipped with an array of online and offline activities and a sizable hard drive, broadband connection, and compressed technology based on Windows Media Player 8. Why not any MP3 players included with Windows XP? All point to a video on demand role. So basically, it's your all-in-one solution.
Now we see what Xbox is coming like, perhaps.
Question is, who's going to be the other person who comes up with the competition?
I think only history will have that written for us.
Once we get there. I hope there's a competition. It sounds actually like a really good idea, and it sounds like a really good thing. Just going back on my principles, I think if given enough money to Microsoft, I'd rather give it to somebody else. So, trouble is for me, I can't deny it sounds like a really good idea, and it sounds like a really good product.
Well, what is it? Basically, web TV, right?
What's
so brilliant about it?
It's a web TV. It's maybe you can download movies, like, you know, they said. Maybe it's basically, if you've seen the picture of it, it's their Xbox system with a DVD player. Okay, so it plays DVDs. It's got its broadband hookup. It's kind of a... It's a multimedia video game system.
So it's one solution for my IT needs in a growing industry.
Could be. If you want to have an Xbox Home Station back there in your PC room server going on with the video game.
That could change the way most just residential, just like people who don't use a computer for programming or anything like that.
Well, this is...
It'd be a good entertainment setup.
Well, this is actually something we had talked about before, where I was basically talking about how everything's going to get down to that one machine. And this is...
Let's hope it's not an Atari.
What are you talking about? You don't want to use an Atari?
This is the closest idea to that.
Isn't the Commodore the state of the art right now?
Yeah, it is.
I heard it's the
2086. The 128.
So. Something like that. Okay. I'm glad that I'm, you know, up on... In the now, right now.
Yeah.
Okay. So
in the then.
That's basically pretty much what the representation of the of that idea that I was talking about before. It's going to be part of their .NET solution. So it dishes out movies, music, messaging, games, and TV programming. And with a, like their word here, stoinking hard drive.
And you can worship there, too. Stoinking.
It's a stoinking.
To the digital god.
Hard drive. Sounds like a slub hard drive to me.
Also known as 10001101.
It also doubles up as a digital TV recorder, which is like a TiVo machine.
Mine's 1131.
Talking about the Elite. In addition, there will be a wireless interface with portable devices such as digital cameras, PDAs, MP3 players, telephones using home RF and Bluetooth protocols, and it may even manage home automation.
Freaky. Yep.
And of course, it sends all that information back to Microsoft because they want to help you out as a consumer. No, it doesn't. It didn't say that in this article, but that's the only thing you have to worry about with devices like that. As devices become more integrated with your life, you want to make sure that they're stupid devices. They're not intelligent devices that collect information and store that in various places, even on the machine itself, and make it hackable to.
We become much more dependent on them, and then once everything is automated and digitized for us, you know, the ideology of the Mayans and their idea of the end of the world, when everything will turn upon us that we don't give thanks for, that we become dependent on these things and take them for granted and don't give thanks for them. So one day, and their prediction is December 21st, 2012, everything will essentially turn upon us and the whole world will be plunged back into the Stone Age.
Actually, I've been on kind of a sci-fi kick lately, and I know one thing me and you were talking about is how basically the lower class breeds more than the upper class. So the theory would be that eventually the more intelligent people would breed themselves out. And I read there's a couple of sci-fi stories based on that premise, really well written by author Kornbluth. He's really good. But the concept is basically in the distant future, and it's basically about medical science, and basically there's a very small society of really intelligent people, and everybody else's IQ is about 40, as that's just the way like evolution has gone. And the really smart people have to provide for everybody else. Basically, I guess they feel morally that there was a sequel story where they just killed them all finally. But and basically, they create they make everything very simple for everybody else. Like they have a little medical bag where you just pick the instrument, you touch it to the person, and it automatically does everything healing because they're too stupid to do everything else. But it's a cycle. So the more easy they make it for the stupid people, the stupider they get, and then the more intelligent they have to get. So.
And so I actually heard a joke the other day, which was really kind of neat, and touched on that. As if aliens were actually, observing the Earth right now, that they would think that the dogs were actually in charge because we follow them around picking up their feces. And the average golden retriever has an IQ of about 40. So in that reality, the dogs probably would rule the Earth because they would train us to go and fetch food for them.
Another quick story is about internet access via power lines in Europe. And I guess that's an idea that we had tried to tackle here in America. We couldn't take it, and we couldn't figure out how to make it work. And I guess they did over in Europe. And I don't know if they actually have it implemented quite yet. But it sounds like a pretty nifty idea.
I believe they have it implemented in Germany, if I'm not mistaken.
In Germany.
And God knows they probably am.
But that's great. That's great if they can use it. That's really cool if, because they already have the power lines there. I just don't know how the thing's going to work exactly. As far as, if there's static on the line, power surges, or I don't know exactly how they're going to route things through that. I mean, I don't know. It doesn't sound too stable to me. I don't know how how they're going to do that, but that's going to be really cool if they can actually pull that off.
Yeah, that would mean just you put everything in one cable. Everything can go in one little cable into your house, your power, your communications.
With all that,
it said, I'm pretty sure Germany has implemented it, and it said all you need to do, and this is awesome, you plug the modem into your computer, you plug the other side into any socket in your house, and there you go, bam, you got your internet service.
Yeah.
It's crazy. But, it sounds like a pretty cool technology, and I hope it works out. U.S. breakup of Microsoft has been canceled. They're no longer going to be breaking up Microsoft. They said they're going to focus more on ideas of how they can make it so that competition can be more competitive, so they can be fair to the competition. And talked about this before. Sounds like breakup would be pretty hard to pull off, and it definitely right now is not something the economy needs to go through. But it sounds like something that it doesn't seem like it's going to work. So I think that the idea that they're going to try to make it so that there's fair competition is a good thing. Trouble is, who knows if that's going to happen.
Personally, I don't know. I think it's not necessary to break up Microsoft, because it seems like people have been realizing in general that Linux could be a better solution, since it's a lot cheaper, and now it's pretty viable, whereas in the past it might not have been. So.
I don't think it's quite ready yet still, but it's
yeah, it's not quite ready yet. It's on the verge. The big thing over the last 2 years is developing a user interface. The underlying code, as far as how it operates, is pretty rock solid. Developing for new drivers has been a big thing, and I think they've tackled it pretty well. They pretty much support almost anything the PC supports, and does it as well, if not better. And then they've been really developing the user interface, and really been developing as far as like consistent applications for Office and things to get people familiar with, kind of like how Microsoft did. But the good thing about it is it's open source, and there's plenty of alternatives. There's lots of different Office suites that they have, and it's all free.
Sweet. Well, it can be free.
It's free if you're able to download it, and if you feel like downloading 3 650 meg ISO files.
Mm. That's the weird thing about the copyright or whatever it was. It said a person can take the same software, give it out for nothing, just give it away, and another person could take the same software and sell it for like $1,000 each.
No, they can't.
That's what I read in the Linux book.
No, they can't. It's under the GPL license, General Public License. What that is you can't. Okay.
Anybody can do whatever they want with it.
Maybe you're right. Okay. Basically, what it is they can take the code, they can modify it. If they modify the code, or if they just take the code and send it on to somebody else, they ask that you have to have the original license along with the code so the next user knows what can be done to it. And it also goes, the licensing says that you can't take this code, do a little bit of a modification to it, and then make a commercial product out of it. I guess, yeah, you could. It's just like if I picked up a rock off the street and I wanted to sell it for $1,000, you could do it. But
I'll buy it. I'll give you $1,150.
All right. Well, it's going to be $775.
Okay.
But they probably won't do that, because you can get another rock down the street and pick it up for yourself and get it for free. So you could do that, but nobody's actually going to go to you, because they're going to say, hey, I'd rather go to the guys that actually make the program, support the program, do the bug fixes for the program, get it from them free anyway. So it's just a point clicking away. So, downloadable movies, I guess it's something that they're trying out. I don't know if it's quite sure that, I'm not quite sure if they're doing it right now. It sounds like an idea that they're throwing out there. They might be possibly looking into it. But basically what you do is you download a movie. And I don't know who has the capability to really download a movie. I've got DSL, and that's really something that's, you know, it's downloading a movie is pretty large. They're about 500 megs or so, depending on what kind of compression and what kind of video codec you use and all that good stuff.
You could always make it like 1 frame per second.
Well, that's great. And I wouldn't want to pay for
it's
that.
A blood show.
But it's a PowerPoint presentation. MGM, Paramount Pictures, Sony Pictures, Warner Brothers, and Universal Pictures. Basically, I guess the idea thrown around is that the video will remain watchable for 30 days. That's not quite true, because it'll only be unplayable after 24 hours after you play it. So that's...
So if they can figure out how to make that work, then Napster and the rest of the world will follow.
Yeah. I'm kind of glad if they make it work, because basically it's going to be thrown right back in their face, and somebody's going to break it and break the copyright, the encryption, or whatever they have going on with it. You put that file in someone's hard drive, it's going to be broken into.
Well, that could go hand-in-hand with the new system out, the entertainment system that Microsoft would come out with.
Well, the thing about that is that even if you get that, you're going to pay Microsoft for the system. Microsoft's going to get a lot of money, just like AOL does, for all the people that AOL has incorporated into their AOL environment. They get paid a lot of money for, you know, I mean, if you have like a AOL has their own special pages. Like, go to keyword CNN, you know. So CNN gives AOL a little bit of money to have that page there. And it's the same thing that the home station is going to be. Think about it. Microsoft, they give you tons of money. You have to pay for a lot of stuff to do stuff on their operating system to incorporate your software in the operating system if you're using, like, their DLLs, for say, or some major functionings of their system. You're going to have to give them some dough. Either way, it's just a big... It's milking the cow. It's just... It's going to be sucking a lot of money out of a lot of people. And basically, it's also a form of advertisement. I mean, they say, okay, I've got 3 million home stations in America. We get a little banner that pops up on the page all the time when they're not playing games in this one specific area. Give us some dough, and we'll put you on the banner. So it's definitely going to be... definitely going to be a lot of money for them. Deprogramming language. It's a new programming language. Not quite so new. It's based off C++.
Did you say deprogramming?
Is that like how you erase everything on your machine so it can no longer function into anything?
When you use the deprogram language, you basically unprogram anything on that machine.
Or is it deprogram, boss? Deprogram.
That was funny. In practice.
And in the now, we try to be comedians, but we're... We fail.
Thank you.
Insert applause. That's why we're talking about computers.
And that's why we're in this little hole, all alone, with no friends.
And bulletproof windows.
Don't give away our location, guys. Like, everyone's been giving away what's going on in the news. Okay, let's bust on this just for a brief moment, okay? Actually, it's probably going to be about 10 minutes.
Yeah, if we actually break out on this, it's going to take up the rest.
Okay, we'll get back to that. No, we'll get back to that. I actually have just two more stories, and we'll get... Two more stories, and we'll get right back to that. Spend a lot of time on that.
Bling, bling.
Deprogramming language. It's actually D, like ABCD, programming language. It's the
follow-up to C.
It's the follow-up to C++, and basically it makes the syntax a lot easier. It's C, but it's still C++.
Yeah, Do we see a little algorithm or heuristic here that there was A, then there's B, then there's C, then there's D?
I never saw
it. I have to say the joke, or we just can't get on with it. Hopefully it'll be better in relation to C than Attack of the Clones was to Return of the Jedi.
Hey, that movie would have been better if they stretched it and made it 2 hours longer than it was.
Sorry about the Fenimans.
Okay.
Yeah, I was thinking that you must be referring to a separate book that...
I'm all screwed up.
I think anybody listening to this right now would be screwed up. All right, let's get back to the story. It clears up a lot of the syntax in the C language and makes it so it's a lot easier to write, and you don't have to worry about compiling your code and say, oh, you forgot a space here or a semicolon there. Does a lot of deeper things. I don't have a website, actually, to announce. You might be able to search for it on the Internet. But it's the deprogramming language is written by somebody who wrote the C language. It takes a lot of functions of the C language that were complicated or even useless, took the useless ones out, and even the complicated ones made them more easier to work with and allowed also for a couple new features to be added onto that. So basically it's just it's in the now of the C++. It's just a revamp, and it's except it's not backwards compatible. That's the only problem.
So I'm going to revamp that archaic syntax. That's all I have to say.
And then it's actually two stories that collide into kind of the same function here. Is basically nerve chip goes live, which is basically a chip that is attached to the nerves and can send electronic signals back and forth and do some sort of basic communication. And then there's another story that's also about cells that are formed out of basically, it's a piece of technology like a microchip. And it basically interfaces with cells and organizes them in a logical way that can be used to maybe store data or basically form a system, and then they can actually run performance checks on how well that system works. So it's just kind of going along the lines of integrating silicon with cells and making a biological computer. So that's going to be pretty interesting.
And if that could be a quantum
and it could be pretty bad.
In a way.
Yeah, it's,
given that cells reproduce exponentially, that's an interesting idea.
Yeah.
But then wouldn't it be like a cancerous computer?
You know what?
Yeah, essentially.
It'd be something in between quantum and regular mechanics. But computers, actually, that is interesting.
They know what makes a cancerous computer, or cancer, cancer,
I'd like to see a cancerous computer.
Grow and never die.
Windows.
It keeps replenishing the DNA. The reason why cells die is because it takes away the DNA from the ends. It unravels, the DNA unravels. And pretty soon the cell has to die, right?
Right, because it's a little like self-timer.
Yeah. They found a way to, because of that, they found a way to reduce cancerous cells for some reason. I don't know the whole thing about it, but they also found a way to make normal cells live forever.
Oh, God. Now, that is
immortality has been discovered.
Innovation. To be able, because, you know, through all of my classes on, you know, biology and botany, is the question is, why do cells die? Because they're all perfect clones of each other, essentially. So now, if we are able to accomplish that, we would live forever. Or whatever we did that to would live forever.
It's too late for us, but our grandkids might.
But now, wouldn't that be strange? Because we still reproduce. So essentially, we would, you know, overpopulate this world very, very, very quickly.
Well, that's why the Mayan calendar, to me, seriously, in all honesty, the Mayan calendar makes me think a lot of why they chose that date and about all the things that are coming together now. That,
why don't you explain what that date is?
Actually, from their perspective, is that's when the line of the sun intersects this. Like the line or the center of the universe, and actually comes off of its axis and goes north.
Oh, and, that is freaky.
You know, like floats northwards and essentially enters the realm of the dead, which is, in their idea, north, which is really neat because they were on the southern hemisphere and ours is to the south. So it's this.
Let me ask you what the date is, then I have a point to make.
December 21st, 2012, which is the winter solstice.
All right, now let me just say, given that explanation you just gave, that scientists just discovered, even though they theorized for a long time, they just discovered really strong evidence that there is, in fact, a black hole at the center of our galaxy.
Well, duh.
Well.
Well, hey. how else do you explain?
The galaxy, I know, but they just discovered... I know it was a theory for a long time, as I said, but...
Well, it's relatively common sense if you think about it, because if you know centrifugal force and all the spinning of the galaxy, everything should fly apart. But no, why is it going
to
the
center?
Thank
you, Professor Schlub, but actually, they just discovered scientific observed evidence, which was a first, which was my
okay,
friend.
Actually, you know what?
Let That's me nice, Wes. They're like, you know, microwaves irradiating from the center.
Hold on.
That's interesting. Theory versus observed fact. Is there a difference? Yes, there is. Thank you.
Hold on, guys. Hold on. This is the story. Let me read the story. This is actually the next story I was going to go into. Let me read this story. Astronomers announced yesterday that they had captured the most compelling evidence yet that a massive black hole is lurking in the cloud-shrouded heart of the Milky Way galaxy. By a stroke of good fortune, NASA's Chandra X-ray Observatory satellite happened to be looking when the presumed black hole enjoyed a quick snack of gas and dust. The analysis of the resulting belch, a sudden X-ray flare that changed in intensity over a span of just a few minutes, provided strong new support for the evidence of a black hole. The findings are consistent with the predictions of Einstein's theory of general relativity. As a result, the discovery is either a cosmic coincidence or it's telling you there's something really right about the theory, said Frederick Banganoff. Well, that's a really bad last name. A Massachusetts...
He said Banganoff.
Institute of Technology Astronomer, whose team announced the discovery of the news conference at a news conference in Washington. I'm going to read the whole story. A paper detailing the observations appears in today's issue of Natural Magazine. This discovery seems to have taken us to the threshold of actually being able to confirm one of the most important predictions that the theory makes. And that's the evidence of an event horizon, or black holes, said Fulvio Melia, a University of Arizona astronomer who wrote a commentary for Nature. Modern physics doesn't have a theory that could adequately account for such an object if this is not a black hole. Black holes are the end result of a stellar evolution of stars at least 20 times more massive than the Sun. When such a star exhausts its nuclear fuel, fusion reactions in the core die out. Without a source of energy to offset the inward pull of gravity, the star's core quickly collapses and a black hole is born. By definition, a black hole is invincible. Nothing, not even light, can escape the crushing grip of the dead star's gravity. To an outside observer, the black hole begins at what is known as the event horizon, an imaginary sphere marking the point of no return. Anything that falls through the event horizon effectively disappears into the universe. To get back out, an object would have to exceed the speed of light, and according to Einstein, that's impossible. While a black hole might be invisible, its gravitational effects are not. As matter is sucked into the black hole, it is accelerated to extreme velocities, radiation is emitted, and the material spirals inward, increasing in energy as it nears the event horizon. Earth's solar system slowly orbits the core of the Milky Way at a distance of about 27,000 light years. The core is in the constellation Sagittarius, but intervening clouds of gas and dust block our view at visible wavelengths. And it goes on to a little bit more history, but that's what was discovered. You guys have continued your rant.
What? It guarantees that our race will eventually be destroyed unless we, by that time, master interstellar travel.
JP, did you read the article about making man-made black holes in 2006, they said?
Can I have one in my closet? A man-made black hole.
I don't know if you'd be able to get your shirt back.
That was interesting.
Well, that would take me a whole lot of cleaning.
I don't understand the details exactly, but basically people were worried that it's pretty interesting. I don't know, it happens on some atomic level, but people were worried that they would accidentally create one that would suck up the whole world.
All of us up.
But then they said, no, the same theory, the same formulas that would lead to the creation of these stated that they're already happening, like six occur a year within the Earth, so I have to read up on that and see what it says.
It said that they would make a black hole, but only for a fraction of a second.
Yeah.
And then it would disappear. So
Well, that could explain a whole lot of missing people.
And socks.
Yeah.
That's exactly what I was going to say. Maybe the inward gravitational flow of the dryer gets so intense that a sock gets zapped out every once in a while.
I have a better idea. That the sock companies have actually figured that out long ago and have made that soap compatible. That soap actually triggers it, so many washes, it triggers the black hole in the sock to essentially implode upon itself.
Or maybe,
and that's why you put 12 pairs into the dryer and you get 11 and a half out.
What could be the logical answer is that when you get a couple pairs of socks, one of the pairs is an Acme sock, and the Acme sock disappears after a predetermined time.
Well,
that they're all treated a little differently, so like, this group of socks will disappear after 32 washes, and this group of socks will disappear after 12. And so after, like, the first wash, they're all mixed together, so you can't really keep them all separate.
We'll have to read up on that for next month, because a black hole is millions of tons of matter. So if they can create that for a split second, that's pretty amazing. I don't know how they could do it.
Well, if it's on the atomic level, you know, it's just enough to suck up a sock.
Here it is now. We value our socks.
So talk it to them.
But basically, in listening to these stories and stories we reported on earlier, on earlier shows,
and that's why it's really important to have that extra rinse on, just in case your sweat doesn't trigger the soap, you know, black hole phenomenon, and actually suck up your foot at the same time.
Is it time for a commercial break?
Want to see this black hole?
No, it's not that black
hole. Got a black hole right there.
He's pointing to his
forehead, gentlemen.
All right. Well, basically what I'm saying is that a lot of the stories we've been talking about is basically saying that with the coming of technology as it's had been in the last century, it's basically built up the ground tools to produce many amazing things, some good, some very, very bad. And that's something we try to have people think about. Okay, well, I was going to divulge, I guess, back into my original thing, and then we're going to kind of digress and then go back to the original story. I was just making a point earlier that the news, is anyone thinking that the news is giving a little bit too much information to the public about what's going on?
Actually, I believe if we're getting this much information, imagine how much is being withheld. Because I actually...
You can think of it that way, but I think a lot of it... I mean, there's the details, but the main things that are going to happen, or that have happened, or that's going on, have been...
Like pre-scripted, or are you talking like wag the dog kind of phenomenon?
Yeah, like the other day, I'm not going to actually do the same mistake that they did. That they're talking about news, and they're saying, you know, this base in Arizona houses all of our F-16s. Well, for those who didn't know, now they all know.
Right, and that was what, 2 weeks ago?
Oh yeah.
Yeah, that was almost too perfect.
So so you guys didn't know. I mean, you know, just so you know, this base has all of our F-14s and F-16s. Just so you know. I don't get it. There's a lot of things that are being talked about.
I actually heard a while back that Bin Laden actually came out and said a few weeks ago that there will be something completely a week and a half ago that there would be something completely unprecedented occurring.
From Tuesday that they had said that a week and a half ago he had said it, and 3 weeks ago he had said that there had been something, and there's actually a lot of stuff that pointed up to it. There was a German prisoner that had called. And this is the only details, because the phone call was literally this quick. Had called, I think it was the FBI, and said, "You guys need to watch out because you're going to get, you will be attacked." And the guy said, "Who is this?" And so, "I'm Germany." And so, "Who are you?" "I'm a prisoner." And they hung up the phone.
Well, getting back to the whole media thing, to me, I think it's essentially the same as hackers who will do something and then they say they did it for a security purpose. Like the people who hacked Hotmail, they put up scripts to do it, for goodness sake, and then they said that it was for the sake of security. To me, it's the same thing. The media, they'll tell everything. They say it's because we have freedom of the press. In both cases, they have alternative motivation. Like, let's face it.
Yeah, but
freedom of the press, does that
mean? That's not supposed to be telling him this.
That's my point. Freedom of the press is important, but... Are there limits to everything? Are there limits to free speech? You know, the whole shouting fire in a crowded theater? Do they need to tell everybody that our nuclear warheads are stored in such and such facility?
Well, I've heard that, you know, listening, because I've been glued to our local station, KTAR, and I've been watching television, that, you know, certain reporters will say, "We won't try to say anything that we've heard," because, you know, they may have reporters that are hanging around speeches or senators or governors or, you know, White House faculty and been closer to the conversations, and they said they won't, but you know, let's start from the beginning. And the beginning is the 11th, 9/11, 911, 2001, Tuesday. I woke up getting a phone call and I didn't answer it right away, and I heard the message on it. And it was a friend of mine, and he left a message saying, "Turn on the news." And I turned on the news. I saw the building on fire because a plane had bashed into it. And I then just turned on in time to see the second plane hit the second building. And it was crazy.
I think so. That's when all of our worlds just changed.
It was absolutely crazy. I have a lot of real in-depth things I'm going to be discussing tonight, and something to really make people think. But it was just crazy. First thing I did was I called up my friend and I asked him, you know, talked to him on the phone, said, "I got to go." Called my father, told him. He didn't know there was another plane heading to Washington. As soon as I told him that, he screamed out sort of sadness and scarcity that, "No!" You know, that the thought of our democracy being destroyed in some sense. And continued to watch the news after I got the phone, and the plane flew at the Pentagon, and you wondered what next. You wondered where your friend was, where your friends are, where's your girlfriend or your boyfriend, your husband, your wife, your children, where's what's going to happen to your neighborhood, what's going on down the street, what's going on to your relatives in other states, what's going on to your world. And because Americans know that living in another country is a quite different place, and we're very accustomed to the luxury, the stability of the American public and the American life. Granted, there's problems everywhere, but we know, a lot of people know that they would rather be here than anywhere else. And this isn't a ploy to talk up America. It's basically just saying that just iterating what a lot of people feel, that the things that they took for granted before are now not able to be taken for granted. Their freedom, no one's taken our freedom away, but the threat to their freedom is now there. Not completely, because they only hit certain areas and there's a whole other country left. But it's the idea, the simplicity and the complexity of the type of attack that happened. I mean, put this on a lower level. Me and a friend of mine, okay, who's gone through 2 years of flight training, and he's gone on a flight simulator, and he's gotten Microsoft Flight Simulator, and got himself in a Boeing 747, and then they've got the buildings that were destroyed in the flight simulator game, and practice hitting it, and practice in the flight simulator, and practice in smaller planes on how to maneuver and use the basic functions, because most of the control panel they don't have to worry about. They only have to worry about steering the plane and programming the flight. I mean, you could program the plane to head towards an airport, and that's what they did for at least the Pentagon's flight. And the simplicity of making something like that happen, getting on a plane with a box cutter, with a knife, going up to a stewardess, putting your knife to her throat, telling her to open up the cockpit door, getting them to open the door, and then taking over the plane. And this is me and you, and everybody can get on a plane any day, okay? Now think, it wouldn't take too much thought to get a small blade on the plane. And then it wouldn't take any thought to go up, well, unless you had morals. It'd take a whole lot of thought, but these people didn't have any morals or ethics. And they go straight up to the cockpit and take over the plane. And use it as a missile. It's not like they had these super geniuses who were thinking and crunching numbers and came up with this intricate plan. I mean, the hardest part was probably gathering the information on which planes had the most fuel. And through time and planning, I mean, you could do such a thing, but to now think that somebody could do that and do what else? Go to one of our pipelines that carry water, gas, anything that is needed to another state, to a small area, destroy that. Who's that going to affect? Many people. The airlines have been put on the ground, lost millions of dollars. One of the airlines, no longer in business, forget their name, but somebody else may remember. Some of the airlines now no longer serving food on the planes. That's fine, but I'm saying that they're going to have to do that to make up some of the money that they lost.
A few airlines cutting their
employees.
Yeah, the 20% cutting their flights.
Okay, so this is how this works, all right? Now those people are going to be looking for a job. And they're going to have to maybe go on unemployment, whatever. They're going to be pulling money from somewhere else, right? I'm not complaining about those people. But the reaction carries on down the line. You may have hit two structures, and then you hit a third. But you destroyed so many things. We're going to go into war because we're going to defend ourselves. I know I've heard some people on the radio saying that we should just think of peace and just sit still. Honestly, sounds like a great idea. But does that stop people from doing it again? No. Is it just as easy as going to another country and blowing them up? No. Trying to make a message. You can't stop terrorism. There's always going to be a bad guy. But you're trying to make a message by eliminating the terrorists that we do know of. And hopefully that will be good enough. Hopefully it won't be a retaliate. Hopefully it won't be enough. Honestly, there's more of us than them. But, as I was talking about the American life earlier, not a lot of Americans are ready to deal with the type of things that Israel's been dealing with, the type of things Iraq has been dealing with, the type of life that they have lived. This whole country is based on freedom. And if we're too scared, and if we're scared out of our freedom to now go into a state of restriction, law, who are we anymore? We're this... It's an absolute...
I think it was Benjamin Franklin who said, you know, those who are willing to give up a little bit of freedom for a little bit of safety deserve neither.
Yep.
So if we restrict ourselves to in fear from the, you know, from these kinds of attacks, we are essentially caging ourselves. And that is exactly what they want.
Exactly.
And so we are paralyzed, and they have won. But now if we keep going on and and in action, which is in parallel and just with our morals and our belief system and our justice system, and not belittle ourselves to retaliate in the same manner in which they have blighted us.
The way that it works in my mind is that if you believe in the type of things that America stands for, if you believe in that, the only way that those things are still going to be placed is if you still believe, no matter what. Usually, America has always been fighting to get to where it was. You know, from the past and the history books, we're fighting to make this happen, fighting to make this happen. Well, we got there, and actually over the last couple of years, we've been kind of gloating on it and creating a lot of problems and not being completely American. And this is just like, you know, like we're Goliath and we've just been struck and we fell. And we still got to remember that we still represent the same things and we're still the same kind of people and it's still something worth fighting for. And we all know that people are believing it's something worth fighting for. But,
well, you know what? Here's the irony. Like, how did we get so big and powerful? Apparently, you know, there's a negative connotation of being the biggest one. And there is, because none of us are going to deny that America does some stupid things to other countries. We're trying to put ourselves on top. Is that bad? Well, you know, it's a natural impulse how everybody lives. But how did we get to the top of the world? Well, because of our government system. And to me, that is the thing in America that's worth dying for. Like, what do we have? Whatever you want to specify that the founders made, you know, the expansion clause in the Constitution, a lot of power in the chief executive, whatever it is, the way America's system worked, that's how we rose to the top of... I'm not ignorant, I'm not saying we're wonderful, everybody else is terrible, but let's face it, that's the best thing about America. That's how our economy got so good. That's where all our patriotism came from. Everything fit together under that. And now, the question is, all these other countries, most of the countries that were against in international affairs, well, they have pretty much the other end of the spectrum as far as, you know, political systems are involved. So,
it's many... things to be learned, as many focuses. One is the wake-up call that we have seen. It's a very hard process. We may impose harder restrictions. We may make it much harder to get in this country. But to do what these people did doesn't require much resources. It does require money for the schooling, the training, to the housing, to live in America. And that's what one of the hopes is, to get the money from Osama bin Laden and the terrorist groups take it away from them. The other aspect, other than seeing what has happened and how to reflect that, is the economy, and it's a huge learning experience. Basically, on many levels, and as far as the economy, we've seen how this incident, it's basically all of the companies that had shut their doors for business for those days, that was enough to take them off the map. All the companies in the World Trade Center, the people that they work with, the type of market that they sustain is a huge impact to many thousands of other people that are still alive. It's a tragedy in all senses. And the biggest scare of it all is I don't think anyone's come up with any idea of why somebody would do such a thing. Not even selfish ideas. I mean, these people gained no money. They gained no power. Nobody respects them except themselves.
Well, it was mostly politics, right? Supposedly under the guise of religion. I mean, depending
actually,
on who you listen to.
I think it's the other way around. It's actually religion that is, you know, influencing politics, because the two targets which they, you know, chose were, or which were actually hit, was the symbol of our world economic power and then also of our world military power. Now, if they were really acts of war, there were much more damaging things they could have hit, like chemical factories in California that would have killed hundreds of thousands.
Nuclear plants?
Nuclear plants would have done the same thing. I think it would have been a shorter and quicker distance to the Vermont nuclear generating facility. That would have also killed hundreds of thousands of people.
The thing is, it's giving credit, but it's not really giving credit. That they did such a precise attack. It wasn't killing the people. They damaged, or they think they damaged, our spirit, which is what runs the place, and they want to see that. It's just like, okay, somebody goes off and murders your family, and they get arrested, and they go to jail, and then they go to the death, they get the death sentence, they go to a chamber, they lay down, they quietly fall asleep, and that's it. Do you feel like you've gotten justice? No. Now, if you take the guy and you beat the crap out of him every day and you have the medic bring him back every day to get beat the crap out of every, you know, again and again and again, it's just like the United States where they hit us like this and it makes us think, you know, that we're weak or we have problems. We do have problems. But it gets in the backbone of the system. And I don't quite agree with Bush as far as a lot of his other political things that he has done and represents. Some things I do, and I'm really happy with the way he's handled this issue.
Let me go back a second. VR, what do you think is the significance of their choice of targets as regards their motivation for doing this?
I think it goes with what I just said.
Well, their choice of targets of our economic system,
mm-hmm.
it's the symbol of it. Now, did they take out the Fed? Or where Alan Greenspan is. No, that would have, like, really thrown our economy out of whack. Truly. Or if they would have...
They attacked the symbolism of what we represent.
Right. Or yeah, they would have attacked, like, some military bases that would have really taken out... Like, if they took out Luke. Now, that would have, like, demolished most of our Air Force. Or at least our F-16s.
Well, for Arizona.
No, actually, it's...
Or the West Coast.
It's the busiest F-16 airport in the nation, so
just so anybody wants to know,
exactly. Just in case you wanted to know that, so if you could actually fly a 747 into the, you know, the fuel.
Okay, I think that's enough. Beep, sponsors coming.
All right. So,
yeah, but what is So you think that's religious then?
Ideologically, yeah.
Okay.
So okay. Because that's the thing which has, you know, divided their religion.
Let's not make a mistake. This is not religion. Maybe a twisting of religion, but it's not religion. Well, and I don't know if you guys have thought about it, but none of the religions speak of this.
Except that that is their sect, which has evolved to this level.
Twisted religion has.
They call it the Holy War.
Well, now, how many sects and little cults are there of Christianity, Buddhism, Hinduism?
Yeah, and this 643.
Well, I'm saying if you're relating this to Scripture, it's not anything to do with religion.
With their Quran. But now it doesn't have anything to do with the Quran. Well, there's a lot of New Age Christian religions which don't really have much to do with the Scriptures either.
Or say which bomb abortion clinics, which would be...
Right, which would be contradictory to the first commandment.
Basically, yeah. So
which
that's
thou shalt not kill. So why are you killing people that kill?
So we're getting down to the point is that, in all honesty, it's in thought, it's not about religion. It is in their minds, but it's their own twisted religion.
See, well, we haven't really talked about the political aspect of it, which is, the U.S.'s support of Israel. Basically, U.S. domination of the Middle East and the rest of the world for our own.
Which why they hate Israel is because of religious differences.
This is...
And land.
Okay.
Yeah, because Israel's trying to get to their temple, right?
Yeah, but that's the reason they want Israel.
Okay, it's all mixed up in land and religion. You're right, it's all...
Otherwise, they would take over some other land if it was just about land. They would take over take over a country that is next to them to acquire their resources, and that would be war. War is about the acquisition of resources. Terrorism is not. It is about ideology and symbolism. It is to inflict terror. It is to disrupt and mayhem.
And then I guess they've succeeded.
They have not completely succeeded, because we can't let that happen.
Yeah, but I mean, as far as inflicting terror in a lot of people.
Oh, yeah. Well, and also if it continues and restricts freedom, that's even more so.
Okay, what I'm trying to say, just goes along with what everyone just said, is that they don't really gain anything except their own pleasure of seeing what had happened. Thinking a little bit deeper is if they based... A society, their own society. Let's just say they had a place to create their own society with no restrictions. The way that they think would never work. Never, ever work.
Which is what? What would they do?
Well, obviously you can see that they don't have any respect for a democracy. They don't have respect for anybody. They don't have respect for innocent lives. It's a self-centered dictatorship of dog eats dog, and absolutely no compassion for humanity. And the only compassion that they have is for their own sick desires. Think about it. Osama bin Laden, I mean, he's not the only one that causes this problem, but I don't have their names, so I'm going to talk about him. They had, supposedly, he has $300 million. Why didn't he invest in schools? Why didn't he buy books for people at school? Why didn't he help his country learn to read? Why didn't he start a business there that would make his country better? Why didn't he invest in already there businesses to make things better? Why didn't he give money to places in the government that needed it for reform or for new things to make things happen?
He might be. We don't know what he contributes. No one really says much about it, but he does. His main thing is trying to form some sort of military group to fight off everyone else he thinks is evil.
But what good is that when you send planes into the World Trade Center, the Pentagon, and you expect a retaliation? Everybody in Afghanistan is saying, hey, we're moving. Problem is, all the borders aren't letting him in. He's now created a worse environment than before.
I don't know what exactly their culture is, you know, what they believe, but like we believe that if we do a certain thing, if we act a certain way, if we are a certain type of person, then in an afterlife, as the Protestant or Christian belief, in the afterlife we gain a lot of riches in a way. We gain something.
They gain 70 virgins. Depending on how good you are, you get a larger or lesser number of virgins.
And that's their thing. That they died.
What do the women
they
get when they
suicide.
Die?
Suicide. Probably
get,
nothing.
Do they get virgin men?
Or they just become re-virginized.
I think they're
really getting experienced men.
See, they're doing something for, you know, the afterlife.
Okay, well, they've already screwed up their living life. Why don't they just off themselves and go to the other life? Because they obviously don't know how to live life.
That's so nicely rationalized for them. Is, now, if you take out yourself while taking out the enemies of Allah, you go straight to the hands of Allah. You don't get stuck with the apostles or anything like that. Or
We all need to make this strict distinction that Allah does not teach that.
Okay, well, I don't think any of us have read the Quran, correct? Maybe I'm mistaken, but...
No, not complete. I've read some.
You've read some? Okay, no. I don't know. Everybody's saying the Quran doesn't teach this and that, but I would have to confirm that for myself. Because
in all
honesty, I know,
I've just been going off of what I've heard from other Muslims.
Yeah, I mean, as far as I know, it could teach violence. Like, I've actually, one of my friends read the Quran, and he tells me that it did. I've read the Old Testament. There's a lot of violence there that God says, go kill these people, that's your chosen lot. So I don't think it is as simple and black and white as religion means peace, lack of religion means death.
All right, well, I just had a real, really bad paranoid thought. Because, all right, this is a language that not a lot of us speak. And so it could actually be that this has been a plot for the last 100 years. Of getting a lot of these mosques established, and you know they're all actually a military force, all just waiting to pounce upon the unexpected Americans.
The fifth pillar. Read that book. Same concept.
Oh, I've completely believed that this is something that's been harnessed and created. Seriously, the teachings from what I'm hearing, because I can only speak this way off what I know, but I'm just going off strong, you know, educated conclusions that. They probably know, maybe Osama bin Laden or these other people, probably know that what they're teaching to these people is a bunch of crap. But they're teaching it anyways because they're getting what they want.
Okay. Well, that's a broader concept. I mean, the Quran has been around for hundreds of years.
I guess it's just an interpretation of the Quran because a lot of Muslims are saying...
Okay, this particular sect, then, I guess you'd be referring to.
A lot of Muslims are saying, and especially the Muslim leaders of other countries are saying that this is no... way and related to their religion. Pakistani's president, other Muslim leaders, no way. And these guys live it every day. So I'll take their word on it.
Yeah, I'd actually believe that a little bit better because, you know, there are all kinds of weird little sects of, like, Christianity of, you know, like, do you believe, is it the Pentecost which handles snakes? Yeah.
Yeah, they do.
I think so, yeah.
Actually, there's one here in town, but that's another thought. But now, how does handling snakes correspond with most of the ideologies of Christianity?
Well, it says, you shall handle snakes. The problem is they interpret that literally, as in when Christ said, you know, you will be like doves. It doesn't mean fly around and lay eggs, obviously. So.
Yeah, there's supposed to be some, like, apostle or a prophet or something like that. Someone in the Bible, some big figure that was... bitten by a snake, a poisonous snake, and he just shook it off and kept on working. And wow. I think they used that idea.
Well, there's actually a Bible verse that says specifically, you shall handle snakes. But
I would like to hone in specifically on what's been happening, but I know we can go off. But
well, I don't know. To me, it's just a question. Honestly, I'm having trouble with this one, because you try to be honest with yourself. All right, this might sound like a tangent, but I always wonder, I'm sure other people do, if I was in Germany in the 1940s, what would I do? If I was in America in the 1800s, would I stand up against slavery? Or would I say the Bible supports slavery like a lot of people did? How would I react to different situations? And the point behind that is, you want to think of yourself as an individual. You don't want to think of yourself as a product of the society you grew up in. I don't. I try to keep myself honest. Is it a coincidence that a lot of people that look like me think that America's right. A lot of people that look like look Arabic think that maybe, or maybe a lot of Muslims think the other position is correct. You know, you understand what I'm saying? You don't want to just follow blindly, but how do you keep yourself honest? I don't know. Like, I criticize a lot of things America does. Do I think that overall it's worth dying for? I don't know how to keep myself honest in that.
It's almost as if you're embedded. It's like embedded into your mind when you're a child, so you don't know if you're really thinking.
Here's my take. Look at it from a...
I actually was reading a really interesting little study. It was people that were actually bicultural. They're actually Chinese and American. And then surveys of if they were more collective or more individuals. Thank you. Listic. Now, they actually showed them icons of like Chinese culture and then gave them a survey, and they tended to be more like
part of a group.
Yeah, communistic, of community based, you know, part of the whole society. Now, then they showed them icons of like the American flag, you know, different, you know, American icons, and then gave them a similar survey, and they tended to be more individualistic, which is really neat. That it's kind of we are what we are socialized, of what we are around the most.
Well, here's the difference is that in America you're not thrown in your throat to be an American. Basically, you can be a lazy bum. Okay, you may not be able to live very healthy or get a retirement plan, but it's not shoved down your throat. Like Christianity, Catholic, Muslim, Methodist, anything, it's not shoved down your throat. Unless, you know, it's done in your household. But in some of these countries and in some of the places, not in every place, it's shoved down their throat to believe this. To me, it's led to be a little bit more tainted. Now, I'm basically going off what I've been hearing from people and people from other nations saying that we don't support this. This is terrorism. This is not of our religion. These people are twisting this for their own sick wants and needs. To me, I'm still trying to figure out what they have gained from this. Maybe it's the pleasure that they have injured us. And look at it like this. What I've noticed, and this is going to be a very bad stereotype, and I'm only going to apply it to a small number of people, is that in some other countries, I'll make this very bland, in some other countries, they do not get to enjoy the benefits that we do.
It's not a stereotype, it's an economic fact.
Well, I know, I just didn't want to single out a certain race and group and make them sound one certain way, but I'm actually just going to make it really broad, and then people will they'll understand what I'm saying, and they can apply it to whatever thought they want to, but they don't get to enjoy the things that we have. To them, it's intimidating, and it's saying that, you know, that they've lived this life this whole way, and they know that they're so trained in that life that they could actually not come over here and deal with this type of life, nor could they develop that type of life in their society. So that clutchingness to that failed society that they want to support, they develop a hate. They develop a distinct hate to anybody else that seems to be doing any better than them. And also, in some of these cultures, the way that they treat women and stuff like that is something that we don't do over here. Of course, there's, you know, bad stories about women being treated in certain ways, but the majority of the way that it's presented to the American public, or even other countries as well, you know, not every country is like this, that women are free to wear what they please and do more free things and be as equal as a man. And to me, that hate that's instilled in them, it kind of then groups them together as a group and makes them now saying, well, we're these people, we have these same ideologies, it's failing us, we don't want to change, we're ignorant, we hate the other people that do this. Now, it's a little bit more personal because we're over there helping out the Israelis. We've got people with no fly zones. We've got people in their countries. They're saying, hey, what we have sucks, but we don't want to change, and we don't want you near us to try to change it.
All right, now, here's the other side of that coin as far as them being jealous of us is concerned. Long ago, or back when everything was pretty much feudal, there was basically the royalty, the few who had a lot, and then almost everybody, the masses, had very little. And then they all looked and they said, well, that's crappy. We can basically group up on them. Obviously, this is a summary, you know. And then essentially, through many generations, people started to basically do that. And then the end result is something like America, where everybody's equal. Now, could you look at this as the same thing on a worldwide scale? America is very rich. We're basically, by a lot of people's accounts, holding others down, basically trying to put ourselves in the best position, naturally. And then the rest of the world looks at us, they say, what the crap? Let's all gang up on them and bring them down. And if we all end up on the same level, is that, are the ends then not correct, even if the means are pretty terrible?
Okay,
well,
what?
Seems like it, yeah.
Well, like, the whole, I think this could be, you know, like, off that was beautiful thought of, like, the, you keep hearing the global village. Usually villages are very community, you know, communistic, communistic anyway. Not in the political sense, but as in everybody relies on each other. And that, you know, everybody understands that they're just a part and not as individualistic as we are. We are out for number one, and that's me. And so now it could be time for the redistribution of wealth, you know, as Marx wrote quite a while ago. This could be the time.
Okay. A couple thoughts is that there's clearly, like we said, we're talking about once, that Microsoft is the leader of its domain. Some senses, some may disagree, but we are the leader in a lot of domains, and there's going to be a leader. But there's a lot of people that actually share the wealth with us. And what JP said makes complete sense, and that's what I was thinking about, is that, you know, it's really not our place to be in everybody's business. And you're going to get some repercussion from that. And, you know, I don't think 5,000 dead is exactly repercussion for that, and I don't think anybody here believes that either. But I believe that too, and I think a lot of people have been telling and talking about that and telling the government or on talk shows saying, you know, we need to be out of their business. That's their country. But it's a fine line because there's some countries that say, hey, we need this help. These people are dying. We need some food. We have this economic problem. Please help us. You can do it. And it's just like Bill Gates having all this money and not giving any money to charity. We're giving a little charity out, but... What?
He does give money to charity.
What? You know what I mean? Like, if he didn't give money to charity...
Oh, he didn't, okay.
Yeah. Sorry to clarify that. So he gives out money to charity because, hey, I can do that. I can help that. So it's a fine line we've drawn. Basically, the world is a complex place now. It's a very complex place. A lot of people are trying to be leaders in their own right. A lot of people are trying to carry on their beliefs, and that's rightfully so. People in Iran should believe whatever they feel free to believe. Anybody else can feel free to believe whatever they need to do, as long as what we're doing to fight terrorism is that believing in terrorists is something that every community doesn't believe in. Because in believing in that belief, nobody wins. And it's kind of like, you walk down the street and somebody comes up to you and just knocks you in the face for no reason, and he just walks off, and you sit in the ground and you say, well, why the hell did he just knock me in my face? You know why? Because there's evil out there. And that's exactly what this was. It was just an iteration of evil. It's always going to be there. But today, or Tuesday, was actually the day that it showed itself so clear. And this is going to lead up to what Bush calls as a resolve. It's to resolve this kind of evil. And this is the scary notion, is that this thing is so deeply entwined into our lives and everybody's life everywhere. To create a resolution, it has to be so many numbers of things and so many ways. It has to be executed relatively, you know, out of 100%, 95% correct. I mean, you can't, it's, everything we're doing stands for so many deep issues that have been there from over time. And the scary thing is that they have cells in this country. And think about this. They had to have been expecting a retaliation of some sort. Do you think that if he believes this hard in these groups believe so hard in their communities and the way that they think is correct, is going to do something like this and fully know that there's going to be retaliation on their life? Is this going to be a planned mass suicide where they don't care? And in this mass suicide, is it going to be them over here suiciding themselves like they did before with the planes? Are they going to do it with other means? You don't do something like this just because you feel like doing it. I mean, the people that are doing this are going to want to know that, okay, this is going to happen and that's going to happen because this is the way it's going to be. I guarantee you everybody asked, okay, well, we do this, they're going to fight us, then what? There's somebody out there knows. And that's the scary thing, is because we haven't seen the end of it. Not because terrorism will never go away, but there is a planned end to this. And it may fail when they try to execute it, but it's definitely going to be tried to be executed. Maybe they draw all these military soldiers into Afghanistan and they nuke their own country, and they did it for their God. And they kill all of our soldiers. Who knows? Who knows if they have people over here working in the environments where they could do something bad? What if they had some guy that was from this group and he works at a nuclear power plant? Who knows? You just don't know. It's so hard to find. It's so hard to catch. I don't care what I've been seeing people say. You know, maybe this government should have been doing something like this. Maybe they need to spend more money here. What about when they did that cut of funding here? What if they did that? How are you supposed to put surveillance on everybody? You can't do it. You can't watch everything. Okay, you can put a sky marshal on a plane. Great. You know what? That pretty much makes that now a hard thing to do now, to take over a plane because he's got a gun and you got knives. And then, you know, maybe they put a huge bulletproof door for the captain and he can't get in there and the whole crew dies, but at least he can't be flown into a building. Okay, that problem solved a little bit there. Not completely, but it solved to where they probably won't have something like what happened on Tuesday. But what new ideas have they come up with?
Personally, I don't think they can use a weapon, a gun or anything that would totally tear the plane apart.
Well, you can shoot out a window and lose cabin pressure.
That's all it takes, and then you create a Venturi effect, which creates a low pressure area in the whole plane.
Yeah. That'd be why they didn't put guns in there when they try to attack the planes.
Yeah, but it slips right that there's no point in obsessing about this specific attack when, obviously, that's completely idiotic. The only purpose of everybody talking about it would be to quell the fears of the public. I mean, obviously, the bigger danger would be, are they going to buy a nuclear weapon from Russia that's allegedly you can buy one there? Are they going to get tons of biological weapons that are supposedly prolific in, you know, Saudi Arabia? Are they going to attack us in some other way?
Yeah, that's what I'm worried about. I'm not worried about, you know, gun stores, I guess, have gone up 50%. Why are we buying guns, okay? We don't need guns in America right now, other than what we already have. You know, I'm not saying no guns, but I'm saying, why do you need extra guns unless they start parachuting these guys in the sky?
Well, there's not enough of them to really be an effective ground force against
our
270 million people.
I don't know why these people are buying guns. Maybe buying ammo for their existing gun, but other buying new guns, I don't get it. I'm thinking about buying a gas mask.
I don't think there's really anything you can do. You know, it's just, if you're going to die, it's your time to die.
Well, yeah, but I'm saying
that you can do about it.
That, of course, you don't want to just stand still and say, whatever happens, happens. You want to try to make some sort of plan.
Man, I just hope the bomb shelters of the 50s don't come back. I always thought my whole life that must have been the worst period to live in, living in constant fear of sudden annihilation. How can you go on like that for sustained periods of time?
Well, actually, if we don't, we're re-entering that kind of generalized state of fear because this we don't know if anything can happen. When it can happen, where it'll happen.
Well, the major comfort that I can say comforts me, that is a sure comfort, is that most of the world is signing on to this event and saying that we don't tolerate it. So it's not like we're worried about a big country like the Soviet Union. It's not like we're worried about, you know, the British or anybody else. We're not worried about them because they're on our side. But do I think these people could take over America? No. No, I don't.
Well,
no way.
There's things to worry about, though. I mean, if we go to try to attack some terrorists and we end up killing a bunch of people that Russians don't want us killing, then they're going to, hey, don't do that, and then they'll start fighting us.
Well, they're helping
us.
That
could be a huge problem.
Well, you might have Russian soldiers with those people, so I think they'll be pretty...
You know, it's pretty fine line, you know. It's pretty...
Oh, yeah, it's very fine line.
Carefully, in other words.
Yeah.
Actually, I've just kind of... idea of Dune came to mind.
The movie?
The whole movie of Dune. Just kind of popped in there. That these people have been bred and raised in this kind of warfare, in this kind of ideology. And here, you know, in that movie, that these people that were raised in this harsh environment were actually able to not only survive, but thrive and essentially take over the whole empire. And it's not a very happy thought, being in the empire. Yeah, because I just keep getting
the
images.
Stormtroopers.
Well, of like, you know, just bees, of things that are completely relentless, that, you know, that kill and die. Like, we can be overtaken by a swarm of bees. Not a few bees. You know, there've got to be quite a few. But enough, and if they're relentless enough, that's what we have to worry about.
You're right. The Russians tried to take Afghanistan. I mean, they've got a big chunk of land there. They're not anything to scoff at. They failed. We'll have to wait and see what happens.
So what is something that we can believe in, that we can clutch in? I know myself, but...
I think it's...
What keeps us going?
I think it's a personal level thing, like... If you lean on God, you better lean on Him now. Like VR said, you know, you've gone to the point of you felt secure. Really, nothing has changed. It's just the way we now perceive it. We all felt secure before, but now we realize, we may have thought intellectually, realized we weren't secure, but now it's emotional, it's tangible. We're not...
Yeah, we've actually gotten proof.
Yeah.
That... This kind of...
We've been kicked, you know, in our ass.
Exactly.
To me, though, it just seems like you do the best you can until you're gone. You know, you can only do so much. You're going to die anyway. So why not just make the best of it and try to help as much as you can instead of worrying about everything? You're going to die.
If you really watch the way, like, Bush has been communicating with others in his whole... all his TV appearances and stuff like that, he's really communicating what the government's trying to say through himself. If you've seen him, how he's talked about the resolve and how we're going to get them and hunt them down, I really think he's doing a good job as far as the perspective he's trying to give to the people. That, okay, we see these people, we're going to hunt them down, but okay, we're not talking about bombing them right away. We're kind of quiet. We're going to see what's going on. It seems like they're planning. It seems like they're a little educated, that they know that this is not an easy thing. And plus, they also said it's going to be a long war. It's not going to be something easy. How he's been talking with the people, and he went down to the rubble down by the World Trade Center, or where it was, and had talked to the firefighters and the policemen and saying, I can hear you. And the people that knocked down these buildings will hear all of us soon. I think his statements are so well put, even though he hasn't been able to speak very well in a lot of his other press conferences, but his statements are so well put. It really embodies, in my opinion, what needs to be done. Because he said today, you know, tomorrow we're going to go back to work. We've done our morning. There'll still be some morning tomorrow. Go back to your fields. Go back to your jobs. Go back to your industries. And be the best that American can be. Because that's how we started. Being the best that we could be in all these areas. So go back and be the best. And we'll get through this and bring the economy back up. Because that's what's going to count. Be free. Support freedom.
That's another thing, too. Like, economy, how good economy is based on perception. So if you think that we're living in bad times now, then you're living in bad times. If you don't, then you're going to live a good life.
Well... You were saying, what's an up point of this? For me, I think one of the things that comforts me And it's more of a long-term thing than something you'll be like, oh, that's great. Well, I think sort of it disunifies us in the obvious ways, but more in the way that every generation has had its catastrophe. Vietnam, Pearl Harbor, JFK. I always felt left out. My whole life I've complained about things about America. I still believe there's tons of problems with it. But now I completely understand. The day that happened, I completely understood the urge. I always questioned. I never knew why anyone would be willing to die for anything. I mean, you know, on the basic level, we all stand for ourselves. But now I understand that unity. I understand why my uncle fought in Vietnam, why my grandpa fought in World War II. I think every generation goes through a time like that, where they learn and they make their own decisions. For those of who decide, you know, that's basically America's legacy.
They've got 80-year-old people calling up the recruiters trying to get recruited. 80-year-old people. 80-year-old men and women. 70-year-olds. Older people. I kind of felt this a long time ago, and I just, you know, but by watching things, and it comes to people when it does, and some people it doesn't, but I think that's very rare. But listening to the radio 2 days ago, this kid called up and says, hey, I'm 21. You know, I just went through my life, never cared about patriotism, never really thought about the country, never really cared about what the government did as long as they left me alone. So the minute I saw that plane hitting the World Trade Center, I immediately knew what patriotism was. He said, I'll go down, I'm signing up tomorrow. I'm going to fight for this country. This is my take on it, is that there's problems, yes. Is there something here to fight for? Absolutely. Absolutely. The ideas that are in place are still strong and they're still there. People have tweaked them, screwed with them, warped them. But not everywhere, only in some instances. The ideas are still there. The idea that I can live in a country with Christians, with Jews, with blacks, with whites, with Mexicans, with poor people, with rich people. Opportunity knocks. You can live at your house, make a web page, make a lot of money off it. You have that opportunity. It's not easy. But you have that opportunity that many places don't have. And we're not shunning them because they don't have it, because I guarantee you they want it too. They may want it in their own way, but they want that kind of idea that they can live in a society like that. And we have it here. And the problem is, I honestly, you know, will say that we've gloated on it and we've been kind of pampered in it, some of us, and we've taken it for granted. And that is not a good thing. And I think now everyone's realizing to not take it for granted. They're not gloating anymore. They're going to try their hardest to hold on to it. And I hope that this kind of unity lasts for months, years. I hope the American flag stay flying in front of your house for months and years. You don't sit now, and once we go in there, and let's just say we're successful at killing a bunch of these guys, you don't say, okay, it's back to normal again. Let's go have our E-Trade company. Let's screw these guys over. Let's screw that guy over. Let's write this law so we can benefit and our buddies over there can benefit in some way. Hope this unity lasts, and I think it will, because the thought of 5,000 innocent people dying, not Americans, not just Americans.
Well, yeah, from a sociological...
Go ahead.
From a sociological perspective, the easiest way to get high cohesion in any group is to give them someone to hate or something to hate. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I am blown away by the absolute unity and the cohesion which is, you know, instilled in this country now. But that will only continue.
In the world, though, too, the United Nations, you know, they...
Yeah, which they've never invoked the treaty clause before.
Do you
Same
know?
With the Australian clause.
Do you know that in Britain? Was it Britain? I think it's where the king and the queen are over there.
Yeah, they did the changeover. They played the...
They played
the
American
Changing of the Guard, yeah. And yeah. Australia and America have had a treaty. It was basically says if one is attacked, then they'll both unify... It was questionable whether this terrorist act qualified, but Australia wanted to invoke it, so now they've signed on. Russia said they're signing on to whatever the effort is. That
That makes me feel...
So in all actuality, this has become a world war without even... with only one strike.
Amazing. Everybody, if you listen to the comments that people have made, leaders from the world. From the world have made about this...
Canada.
When they have seen this happen, it hits everybody at home. Absolutely everybody. Even Iranians, people over there. There's people over there that got a head on their shoulders. It hits everywhere. We're attacking the people that it doesn't hit, the people that don't care. These people only care for themselves.
Well, the shadows. They hide in the shadows. It's going to be hard to attack them.
It is definitely going to be a hard thing to do. But...
Well, actually, we, you know, during the Revolutionary War against Britain, we used guerrilla warfare. And that's one of the reasons why we were able to overcome a greater power. And that's what is truly frightening.
Wow, you're right. I never thought about it in that context of how truly outnumbered, outfinanced, outmilitary, you know, unit we were versus Britain. And
we used, you know, camouflage, we used trees against brightly colored, you know, straight row marching, you know, troops. As we were hiding the trees and we'd take them out because we did not follow the rules, you know, the gentleman rules of war at that time.
Okay. Sorry, I'm going to have to make one more literary recommendation. This is a must. Exactly, it hits that nail on the head. The Only Thing We Learn by C.M. Kornbluth. Read it exactly that point. Go read it now. That's all.
Get it at BarnesandNoble.com or Amazon.com right away.
You know, the World Trade Center.
Even eBay.
A lot of the nations lost people. That's why. Another reason that they had, you know, I think... the British, you know, they had a lot of people there.
It was about 500.
Yeah. So, you know, they're, you know, they lost a lot. This is a World Trade Center. This is attacking not just America. This is the world.
Here's the new thing that the world has never, ever seen throughout the entire history of it. We've seen the big guy. We've seen the little guy. We've seen the big guy throw bombs at the little guy. We've seen the little guy trying to get the big guy. We've seen war after war of that same type of cycle. Okay? We have never seen a coming together of everybody like this. It's a new world now. We're now humans. We're not black. We're not white. We're not based on religion.
We're earthlings.
We're earthlings. We're humans, whatever you'd like to call
us. Yeah, actually, man, I just keep going back to this. But I read another story where, in fact, a person's desire was to unify the
human
race.
That's why JP doesn't work, because he was reading.
Yeah, I got paid over the summer to read, so that's why I'm so well-versed now. But it's actually a really good comic series, and somebody wanted to unify the human race. They did it by simulating an alien attack, and sure enough, it worked.
Like, oh, well, it just parallels this whole dynamic.
Exactly.
That's... the whole global kind of like one world government kind of thing. It's going to unite everybody. And United Nations obviously is going to play a major role in that. And, you know, I can see it's not going to be, you know, these separate different nations. It's going to be everybody combined into one and totally change the world.
Yeah, well, we've also seen that with the Euro and a lot of uniting things.
Yeah.
The confidence on this new world is going to be based off of how successful we are at fighting this type of evil, because in fighting this type of evil, it's going to ensure the success of our kind of living. Not America's, but everybody's kind of living. Because maybe out of some people's minds, but different cultures in their own different styles can still live productively. They don't have to be Americans. They can be their own culture. Still live productive. People are living, they're surviving, they're growing old, they're having children. And that's why a lot of people are bringing religion into it. They're bringing everything into it, because it absolutely ties everything together. And this enemy embodies embodies the perfect enemy. They embody the perfect threat. They embody what everything that is that can be bad in this world.
Why? Because they cannot be seen?
Because they hit and run. They have no remorse. They have no moral. It's not something you could sit there and have an argument with them and then change their mind about things.
Yeah, he's right. It's like World War II, looking back on it, it's like, you know, oh, they were slaughtering millions of Jews. It's like they've given us the perfect moral high ground. Like, they hit civilians. They disappeared. They supposedly were unprovoked, you know.
Yeah, they don't care. They're crafty.
They've made people, which is bizarrely sadistic, call on their cell phones their loved ones and tell them they were going to die. I mean, that is beyond imagination.
It is the infamous and enigmatic they that we blame everything upon.
Hey, we also give them credit for a lot of stuff.
Yeah.
Well, actually, we give them the credit. Yeah.
Yeah, them gets all the credit, they get all the blame.
I like that.
So it's, I keep thinking about the Mayan calendar, and I keep thinking that it's not only what you said about the sun, but I think that more stuff in the long lines of like Armageddon, as far as a unified society, maybe the utopia, but then backfires because there's so many lessons to be learned.
Oh, you know what? I learned one really incredible little thing today. It's the SCA. You know, the people that, recreate, you know, like, fighting in battlefields with axes and swords and all that. They are the largest foot army in the world. They themselves could probably take over countries.
Who?
Wow.
The SCA?
The medieval reenactors.
Yeah, the people that reenact, like, you know, wars and all that. We have a few houses down here, and
they just don't have. Well, you're right, but
actually, the government keeps really good track of where all the houses are and how many there are, because they could take over large areas.
Well, they could, but they just don't have a lot of technology. Like, well, we came in.
No, that's not their motive.
Well, I know. I'm just
they
saying
they could do it in like severe just force. Like, you know, these people, they didn't have a whole lot of technology. They just had innovation. And they just had sheer tenacity, you know, to take, you know, to spend, you know, only several thousand dollars to be able to tool themselves and also put themselves in the position of being on a plane to kill themselves and everyone else. Mm-hmm. It was a very low tech operation.
Well, with those medieval people, I mean, it depends on how they attack. If they're in a certain like area, you can just go from the sky and bomb them, or, you know, or we got guys with machine guns and they don't, but. If you throw them into a heap in society, it's pretty hard to get them. And you're going to kill people along the way.
Yeah, so that's the real danger of it. You're going to kill a lot of innocent people if you try to attack these terrorists.
It's really amazing from a technology standpoint. I think it's really amazing. There's not always a high-tech solution to a low-tech problem. Like, we're all thinking high-tech. They come in here with something completely... And just,
what's also really interesting is, you know, they blamed symbols. We're blaming people. Like, people died because they wanted to destroy symbols. We're going to destroy innocent people to kill, you know, the guilty ones.
Wait, we may not be doing that. We don't know exactly what they're going to be doing. But
well, if they bomb, if they don't use this as a... Like what we tried to, you know, play off Vietnam as, it's just a police action. Is if we don't just go in there, all the FBI and whatnot, go in and take out all these cells in conjunction or in ordinance with our justice system, we're going to have collateral damage.
It's kind of like what they did in Vietnam where they locked up a lot of the Asian people, but that's...
No, I'm talking of using, you know, like a police action in Afghanistan.
They said pick up all the brown guys, you know what I mean?
Yes.
Talking about the cells here.
No, I'm talking that sells there in every other country and track them down in however we can. Otherwise, you know, we will be terrorists in their eyes once again.
Going this briefly, is that according to some of the news, that we had given aid to Osama bin Laden and also trained him.
I know, that's one of the things that can make everyone cynical, is that why don't they say that 1,000 times on TV? Like, they repeat the same piece of information 1,000 times. That makes me very cynical.
Actually, George, that was George Sr.'s.
Exactly.
No, that was his doing.
Funded and trained him and their men.
That was for a different reason. Those freedom fighters were trying to help him out, Afghanistan out. And he was just one of the, you know, Osama bin Laden was one of the big guys in there.
Yeah, it's, we don't know who to blame exactly for all the different faults, but we do know that terrorism is here now. Hopefully it's not here anymore, and hopefully we'll be able to get rid of it to some extent and keep America strong and keep non-terrorist nations who have good beliefs. Keep them going and keep life moving. And in the now, we're going to keep on going, and we'll be here next month. So everyone have a good evening, good day. Pray for the lost ones. Pray that good prevails. And stay strong.
This is VR reminding you to ask, what color are your values?
JP,
as Napoleon said, religion is what keeps the rich from murdering the poor. The poor are the rich.
I'm Dimitri, I don't know anything.
Dimitri never knows anything.
I never know anything.
We'll see everybody next month. From this car crash night.